When I first became a Christian, the book of John was the first book I went to because for some reason that was the official book you had to read when you first came to know the Lord. And it seemed to me that this actually has such a powerful beginning. The phrase just speaks almost the whole of the incarnation without really telling the Jesus story. But it says that in verse 1 of John, John chapter 1, verse 1, that in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And He was in the beginning with God, speaking of Jesus' existence, pre-creation. And all things were made through Him, through Jesus, and without Him nothing was made. And in Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And in verse 5, the key verse for today, and the light shined in the darkness, but yet the darkness did not comprehend it. Now, I think that there are three things I'd like to point out today. First of all, what is there not to get about the gospel? What is there not to understand? I think that there are three levels of blindness. First of all, there are people who are blind because either they were born that way or made that way. And I'm going to say it in this context, that there are people who are going through a very difficult time right now. And I'm not blind to that myself. I know how hard things are for you. I know that your present circumstances seem to be screaming against God's existence, God's relationship with you. You feel maybe forgotten and on the back burner. You're wondering why times are so hard. I put you in that category. That being blind because you were made that way, or blind because you were born that way, really is a human condition. When we're brought into this world and left alone by chance, it's very difficult to see God. I know that from my own background. Growing up in Los Angeles, you see things you don't want to see. And I work in Van Nuys, which used to be a fairly good community. I've spent many, many years in the Los Angeles area, and that's about as close as I can come to this community. I've never been to New York City. I don't know what it's like there. I know that in third world countries, it's very difficult. You know, there are people that live in very tough circumstances, and it's very hard for them to see God, to know God, to feel God when they feel like they're abandoned and on the back burner. And so when I say that I think that there are people that are blind that are made that way, I know that the hurts that people have gone through in life make it very difficult at times for people to see God. And some of you might even be in a relationship with people like that. If you know somebody that's struggling with depression, and I don't want to go way back on some messages, you know how I feel about depression. I personally feel that depression is at the root of almost every compulsive disorder out there. That if someone's drinking heavily like an alcoholic, then it's most likely triggered to depression. Whether you're on drugs, it's mostly triggered by depression, some pain. But when people are going through depression, you can see that they're acting in a way that they don't want to act. You know, there's part of you that wonders, why do you say that to me that way? Or why are you doing it that way? But in the back of your mind, you know that something's not right. That they're not putting the wires together correctly. Their relationships are breaking down and it clouds their vision. And they can't see what's true, what's accurate. They really, for the most part, are pretty helpless when they're going through a difficult time. Does anybody want to maybe raise your hand and acknowledge that you know somebody like this? You know somebody that's an alcoholic, somebody who's a drug addict, somebody who's going through something? And you know what I'm talking about. Their actions really are counter to what they want to do. It's almost like if they could just do, they almost couldn't do anything worse to get themselves in more trouble. I mean, you know, even if they just left everything alone and did nothing and just sat around their house, would be better off than what they do, because what they do is just so counterbalanced to what's going on. Just recently, there's a person here that I really care about and had hoped for the best, even though I know that he had worn out his welcome to a number of people, and just kind of found out recently he's back in legal trouble, and he, this one could be a really serious thing. And somehow in the back of his mind, he had just justified it that this was going to be the last hurrah, the last job, you know, the last thing that he was going to do. And, I think that in that particular situation, incarceration might have actually answered that prayer. You know, it's going to be the last thing he might be able to do. But we get ourselves into trouble all the time. We think that this is the right thing to do. And so I think that for some people, that blindness can really get in the way. I think that there is a blindness because sometimes Jesus is hidden from people. I think that we can't see what's being concealed. And I put it in this terms that I think that there's some people that are blind because it's hidden from them, from God. That's one view. And then I think that there's another situation that says that this good news or Jesus is hidden from them from people. I'll talk a little bit about that later from 2 Corinthians. People sometimes get in the way. Have you noticed that sometimes certain kinds of people make you feel uncomfortable? And I don't want to talk about racism specifically, but I know that like where we are, there's lots of homeless people. And I don't mean it in the same context. In Simi, I think we tend to think that that's okay because they're all in their own little place, you know, their proper place. You know, we have them in their little corner and that's okay. In Los Angeles, it's a little harder to do. So when you're standing at McDonald's, you're standing at Starbucks. I was going into Starbucks on Monday because I have to pick up like these bakery orders. And this homeless person came in and I noticed that pretty much everybody in Starbucks looked as though this person didn't have a right to be there. As a matter of fact, somebody in line said, well, if that guy's homeless, what's he doing buying coffee? Oh, yeah, of course, because homeless people don't like coffee. It makes perfect sense to me. But it was almost like they were ostracizing that person for something that really is part of a human condition. Now, I think when people are going through a hard time, they could, you know, you don't have to like, you know, alienate yourself even further. But this particular situation, what's wrong with somebody getting a cup of coffee? You know, is our world too small where we can't let that happen? You know, and so I think that for some people, it's like there's almost this sense of privilege that people have, that they're especially like where we work, it's difficult because part of my job is I have to run security, and so I'm the guy that has to kind of like tell some of the homeless people that they can't be wherever it is that they are. Like, you can't sleep in the manger scene or something, but you can't. I that's my job, and I don't like doing it. But the other day I was down in this other place, and as I walked by, they went, there goes the hatchet man. And I'm like, man, that's a hardcore label. But it's not that I'm not caring or compassionate, because I definitely am. I recognize that there's this wall that's taking place with people. We get it in our mind that there's a sense of privileges, and there's us and them, and they're them, and we're us, and somehow that's what it is. And we're withholding grace. Can I ask people to be honest? How many of you could be on the verge of homelessness if something bad happened within 2 months? Yeah, probably a lot of us could be, you know. Well, it's true, you could. I mean, the point is the possibilities there. All of us have been there, you know. All of us have been on the verge where we've been struggling with money. And when you live in a society where it takes like $4,000 to get into a 2-bedroom apartment, you know. Anybody know the Byer Street Apartments by any chance? I lived there, Sue and I lived there when we first got married. Yes, this is the elite luxury apartments of Simi, I'll tell you that, you know. Comes with its own pets, cockroaches and all, you know. But I just heard the other day that for that 2-bedroom apartment is $1,200 a month for a 2-bedroom apartment. I mean, that thing ain't worth $50. I don't even remember what we paid for it. But they wanted like this $3,000 security deposit, and I mean, that is tough. I mean, things happen to people. So I think that you have to recognize, when I say that it's been withheld from them to a degree, you know, Christians can be pretty stingy with the grace that's been given to them. And we can be sometimes people of, we demand privilege. We think that there's something special about us, and there is. But we forget that it's for all people. And I'll talk a little bit about that whole manger scene where, and Ariana had hinted at that. I'm going to have to learn how to repronounce that. And I don't know what it is. I think I keep putting the Mexican, like, Latino, Ariana. That we're going to do that. It's like the 30th time someone's corrected me on that. But she had hinted at that the gospel, the good news is for all people. For all people. All people. It's not for some people. It's not for special people. It's for all people. All people have access to God. Does that make sense? God is comforting them whether they deserve it or not. God's comforting you whether you deserve it or not. He's going to comfort them. We ought to remember that. The other point there is that there might be a blind eye turned because of ignorance. I believe that there is a lot of people that just really are blind to the realities of life because they choose to be. If they don't look at it, then it's not there. If they don't have to deal with their problems, they live in some pretend denial land, and it might be good. But you know, we have to begin to take a look at our lives in real terms. When I was 11, I can't remember when. It had to have been before I was 12, because that's kind of when my world started to shake apart. But I talk about this being the gift that I just did not understand. It had to have been like fourth grade. I wanted an M16 Marauder and a G.I. Joe. My mom wouldn't let me have a G.I. Joe because she didn't want me to play with dolls. And back in our days, that's how G.I. Joes were looked at. You know, the special kids. I know it's hard to believe. Even when you had the ones with the dog tag that you could pull and it could have the G.I. Joe noise, I wasn't even allowed to have that. But I wanted an M16 Marauder. And an M16 Marauder, they used to have, prior to that, we had cap guns. You remember that, made out of steel? And we had like these little fake rifles that you were air rifles, and you could stick them in the ground when you were mad at your brother, and you kind of cocked it, and then you shot him with like a dirt clod. And that's about all you had, you know? But I wanted an M16 Marauder, because an M16 Marauder by Mattel had the speaker built into the gun butt, and it could have almost, you know, 20, 25 minutes of constant repetitive automatic weapon firing sounds. Now, when you're playing war, you guys know you need that. Do you know what I mean? You need that. I wanted an M16 Marauder. Now, my grandfather was this intellectual person who liked to do, you know, things consistently. And every year, he'd send me like $25 or something. And so I didn't care what I got for Christmas, because when $25 in like the 60s and 70s, that was a lot of money. You know, I mean, that was, man, you could go to Zodi's, you could go to Gemco, you could buy White Front, you could buy it all and get a little mini pizza and a Slurpee. You know, you were happening. Of course, this was in the world before Big Macs and ranch dressing. Please don't pass out. Yes, there was a time in human history where there was no ranch dressing, and there was no Big Macs. Did anybody remember that back that far? My kids would not have survived without ranch dressing. Sure, I was telling my kids that we used to have to make Thousand Island with ketchup, mayonnaise, and relish, and that was it. That's all you had, you know. Blue cheese was blue because it really was moldy in the refrigerator, and Mom broke it up and stuck it in there. So anyway, so I wanted this M16 Marauder. I figured, God, Gramp's good for this. He's going to send me a $25. So I wasn't really too nervous when I didn't get it under the Christmas tree. You know, I got the typical stuff, socks, shirts, whatever. And didn't get no M16 Marauder. And my grandfather sends his packages under the tree. And it's bigger than it normally is. And I'm thinking, wow, this must be lots of money. And so I tore open into that package, just like my normal carnage, and inside that package not only was not $25, there was no M16 Marauder, it was a little brown book. And inside that little brown book was a coin collection. Coin collection. Yes, I was excited too. Thank you for empathizing with me. And in this coin collection, there were like 3/4. And now, to tell you how stupid I am, one of them was a 1927 quarter. One of them was a buffalo nickel. You know, little ones with a buffalo on the back, which at that time was in everybody's pocket, so I didn't understand what was so special about that. A mercury head dime. And a penny that was messed up. This penny was screwed up. It was silver. It wasn't like a penny. And he said, I hope you enjoy this. I'm like, enjoy what? Enjoy what? It's like 40 cents. I want an M16. And let me tell you, parents are crazy. My mother was crazy. She could have told me what it was worth. She could have said something about the intrinsic sentimental value of the thing, but no, my mother wanted me to learn a life lesson. And so she did the, you should be thankful for what you got. You ever got the spoiled on Christmas lecture? How many here ever got the spoiled on Christmas? You're so spoiled. You're so spoiled on Christmas. So I'm thinking, great. Not only do I not get the money, now I got 41 cents in some stupid book. I did not know a thing about coin collecting. Had no idea that people actually saved. I couldn't understand the concept. Didn't get it. So my brother, little brother, which cunning as he was, saw that I didn't know what was going on, and he might have been the brighter one at the time. And there's this liquor store down on the corner of 107th Street in Englewood, and he goes, well, if we didn't get what we want, we might as well take our money down and go buy some food. Now, he didn't get any money, see? I got this dumb little coin, so I'm like, yeah, whatever, let's do it. So I took that mercury dime, and I took that quarter, and took that silver penny, and we went down and got ourselves something. Like, they didn't have ding-dongs back then, so I don't know what we got. I think we got dirt and a soda or something. And I spent that penny. I let it go. Now, had I known what I had I known that I had a collection, had my mother told me what it was, if she had told me the significance to my grandfather, it would have been okay. But I just thought I got 41 cents, and I was going to show him by spending that money. Now that I'm older, and I know what he had given me, I feel a little foolish. Because I didn't understand the gift that was given me. I didn't understand the plan. I didn't understand the gift. And the way I look at it, that there are lots of people that are out here that are in the same condition. A gift is there. A gift is available. A gift of grace is available to all humankind. And yet people can't see because the prideful are ignorantly blind because life causes them to live it on their own terms. Now I say that in this way because there are some of you that are here today who have already made that decision. You have already decided in your mind and in your heart that from this day forward or from last week forward, it doesn't matter when it was, but you've decided that you're never going to get hurt again and you're going to live life on your own terms. And it's going to be about you. That's a mistake. Because you don't know what has been given to you. You don't understand the grace that's there. Some of you are confused because religion has made the road to God seem somewhat impossible. I'm recalling, and I've been re-listening to, well, I've listened to it a lot. I've been a fan of the book for many, many years, but The Ragamuffin Gospel by Brennan Manning is one of my all-time favorite books, and I've had a chance to listen to it on audio, and I was reminded by one of Brennan's ideas that, you know, there's people that don't get grace, and he was at a sermon or a place giving a message, and he was preaching the message of grace, and as he was leaving, he overheard the pastor tell his associate, because he was a guest speaker, that guy totally blew it today. He didn't say anything about what we must do to be saved. That's an idea out there that people have to do things in order to get saved. They can't see the gift of God that's in front of them. Religion has made access to God seem very, very impossible. And if you're a normal human that evaluates your life and you start looking at your own characteristics and your personalities and you start being honest with your own shortcomings, it's easy to think to yourself that God isn't with you just on the basis of the rules are too big, that you're not right. Ariana had mentioned that somehow when you're doing what's wrong, you feel like God's distancing himself from you. And then the third thing there was that the hurts and the disappointments of life have made it hard for you to see God, if anything. Now, I think, I called attention to John chapter 1, verse 5, because I think that there's something significant about the Jesus being made an analogy for light, and that light is shining in the darkness, and the darkness just doesn't get it. I'm going to have to shortcut this and go right kind of to the main vein here. And so I'm just going to give you my real short version and go to 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 19. So you get the part that there are people who are blind, right? They can't see it, what's happening. I was going to go through the obvious analogy of the manger scene, and I was going to talk about the Christmas star, I was going to talk about the angel visitation, and I was going to talk about the audible voice that people heard. Now it seems to me that those were indications that whatever it was that was represented in Jesus, God wanted us to know about it. That there were signs that could have been observed. And yet nobody really picked up on the fact that something big was happening. So here's a star that's in the heavens. It wasn't just only for special people. Anybody could have seen the star. And if they had any understanding, they could have known what it meant. But not everybody did. And not everybody got an angel visitation, but they could have followed. This could have been a word of mouth thing. I'm sure that the shepherds told somebody what they were doing and where they were going. It wasn't like nobody knew and nobody came. Even Herod had an idea. He's a complete unbeliever. He had an idea of what was going on. And yet all of that stuff of God, the stars, the angels, the voice, all that stuff was happening right in the midst of people's circumstances, and there were still people who didn't get it. That seems to be indicative of Jesus' message. He's walking among the people. He's doing miracles, signs, and wonders. And to this day, we still look at those things as though they were advertisements to some new religion. We never really wrapped our mind fully about what it means that Jesus is here, the kingdom of God, and how it comes. There are still people that don't get it. What's going on? Now, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, 19, I'm going to be reading from those verses, verse 19 through 21 first. This is what God wanted from you. Before we get there, just say, it really isn't that complicated. Grace isn't that complicated. Verse 19, what He wanted for you. In verse 19, it says that God was reconciling the world to Himself in Christ. Look at that verse, the next verse. Not counting men's sins. Now that's a big deal. Religion that makes God some kind of a rule keeper, that makes God some type of an official who is busy with his chalkboard marking down your rights and wrongs, has missed the point of the gospel. The good news, it wouldn't be that good. News wouldn't have been that surprising if it had just been that here's the law, here's judgment, you failed, you're going to, you know, wherever. That wouldn't have been a surprising track, and that's how people see it today. There's good, there's bad, and you're either us or you're them. Do you see the line of delineation I'm trying to create here? It would have been helpful if I put my other 5 points. But I think that what God wanted for you is to recognize that God is not a rule keeper. He is a relationship seeker. It's not just about us seeking God. It's about God seeking us, and it's about us being in a place where we can be found by Him. God is not counting men's sins against them in this context. He desires that the world would be reconciled, and that was the focus of Jesus' coming and the focus of Jesus' work. In verse 20, this is what He wants from you. So if He wants you to get that there's grace, then what He wants from you is to become an ambassador of that grace. It says that we are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making His appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. That is our message. When Jesus became incarnate and He walked in the flesh, the incarnation, God came down. Isaiah chapter 7, that He is now with us. If you go in earlier passages of Isaiah, it says that the light has come and that light has risen upon us, that there is an incarnate God is with us. God has come to earth, wrapped Himself in our injured flesh. He has manifested Himself. One key passage that would be good for memorization for all of you is 1 Timothy chapter 3:16, especially in the King James Version, where it says God, it's just plainly, God was manifested in the flesh. God's here. So the kind of incarnation that we're talking about now, we have one of our professors is a little confusing guy, Dr. Belsby, and he always uses this term, and I watched him and Dr. Dorman, this other guy, get into a fight over the term incarnation. One of the professors says that you can't use the word incarnate in slang terms, it's like defying God, and the other guy's just such a liberal, he don't care, and I agree with him. He speaks about this incarnational ministry, about what it means to flesh out Jesus, about what it means for Jesus to operate inside of your life. And if you think about verse 20 in that context, that we're talking about an incarnation of another kind. I'm speaking of an incarnation that happens in us. God happening in each one of you. You becoming the vessels of Jesus. This is how Jesus becomes incarnate, made real, made flesh in our community. This is how Jesus is made flesh in our church. It's because we have become ambassadors of that message. The third thing is in verse 21, it says that what He wants, how He wants to make that happen is God has made Him who had no sin to be sin for us, that in Him we might become the righteousness of God. It's important to understand that in the very first part of 2 Corinthians 5, verse 19, that God showed Himself to be on humanity's side. He's with us. He's for us. He wants us to win. How many think that God is just up there trying to play some game with humankind and that there's these tests? Just recently, I had a young man come into where I work, and he had said that. He had said, God's just testing me. And so he's having all these problems as though God's up in heaven saying, let's just screw with Steve today. It'd be fun. Don't you think? I don't think that's what God does. I think God knows that a person like Steve is going through a difficult time. I think God knows the things that he is facing. And God has dispatched the entire resources of heaven to work on his behalf, to save him from an enemy's plan who wants to bring destruction, from his own devices, which all of us have weakness. I'm sorry, Steve, to expose that to the entire church. But I think God is counteracting that from happening. And that is what I see as God doing. God is counteracting what's taking place by way of the curse, by way of the fall in our lives. That's what he wants. He wants to be with us in those times of trial. So God showed himself to be at our side. Do you know that there is comfort that only God can give? Have you ever wrestled with an issue and then realize that there is no peace, and you have struggled to try to find it, and you have found it only in the presence of the Lord? God himself becomes comfort. I oftentimes hear this. What does God want me to do? What does God want from me? And I'll respond in the same way that I do to everybody who asks me that question. He wants everything and he wants nothing. What he wants you to do is to trust him that he's at work in your situation. What that has to do with your character. Why do I think that Christian character is important? Because I think some people walk away thinking that I think you can do anything you want and don't have to worry about what people think. That's not the truth either. I think our character is important because it either displays faith and trust in God, or it just displays panic and, you know, chaos. I think there has to be something of character that happens in us. So I think that God is available to mankind. I think God is available in mankind. And so I'd already talked about the future incarnations in our community and church, that God has given us, according to verse 20, over to the same ministry of reconciliation, that we can become agents of God's business, carry out his mission in the world, that a miracle could come by way of a willing heart. And I said this last week, and I didn't expect it to be, or a week before last, I didn't expect it to be such a controversial point. But what was controversy is like, well, what does God want me to do? He wants you to be the miracle. You know, there are times that we are called to pray for things and walk away and trust the Lord on it. There are other reasons that I think that we have resource, that we have maybe dollars, that we have maybe the kinds of relationship we have, so that we can give to somebody else. Does that make sense? And so we can be miracles too, you know. It's not just some supernatural thing that happens. We can make things happen too. And not by our own thing. That's God moving on our heart and us responding willingly, and something happens. Now, I'm going to shortcut to the end in this because I need to by way of the time. But I really don't think it's that complicated. I think that Jesus, the important part here is to see that Jesus is available for all mankind. He doesn't want anybody to perish. And verse 3 of chapter 6 is very important because it talks about men getting in the way. And I think that I'd like to just call attention to that. That it says don't be a stumbling block, or they don't want to be a stumbling block. We can be a stumbling block to God working in people's lives. That's what I meant by us hiding things sometimes from people. We have to recognize our own capacity to do that. You know, when I started preaching a message of grace, it's been a long time. And I never thought that it would be all that controversial, because it was easy for me to gravitate to, and it was easy, it brought me a lot of peace. But it never ceases to amaze me how many people really think that they have saved themselves, or people that are angry at me because I say that God is available for all people. I've had people call me a universalist. Do you know what that is? They say that I think that all men are saved, and so that I think that I use no lines of discrimination whatsoever. I've even had people say, if you believe that guy's message, he says that anybody can come to know Christ. And that actually was said as an insult, not as a compliment. I've had people who say that the way I relate to people, that, one guy that I've known for a number of years said that one of the reasons he didn't like coming to our church is because we have congregants that made him feel uncomfortable. That, you know, that'd be good for them to go over there, but he just doesn't know whether he wants to go to church with them. It was hindering his worship. I was very grateful that man chose another fellowship. don't know why it's so hard for us to envision that God cares about us and that God wants to relate to us, that God is, that we're worth that love. We're worth not because of what we do, we're worth it because God says that's what we are. And I want to give that to you, all of our church, as we go towards this Christmas season, that you can be a vessel of God's grace. You are an agent of change. The Lord's mercy is accessible to you. And I'm hoping that you can get a little bit, again, having to forgive me for the shortcut of the message, which might have actually taken longer because I was trying to shortcut it. So it kind of was counter to the purpose there. But just hear my heart, would you, that we can be those agents of grace, agents of mercy, that if God's love is going to be fleshed out, it's going to be fleshed out because you've decided to do it, because you've decided to be kind, you've decided to reach. And so with that, let's just pray and ask God just to surround you today.